Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And here's Johnny.
And welcome to our annual spooky special, Dreaming with Freddy. This year, we are reviewing every Nightmare on Elm Street movie in reverse. This week, we are reviewing Nightmare on Elm Street. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, let's talk about that we are on our final movie, John. Yes. A Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984, the OG.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
This entire run of a series, was it a nightmare? Or was it a dream?
I'm of two thoughts. So it definitely affected my feelings watching them in reverse. Because there's a lot of instances where there's movies that I enjoyed the things that they were doing. Maybe not the whole movie, but I enjoyed things about the movies. But then come to find out that they're just basically rehashing or retelling or ripping off better movies like Dream Warriors and The Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, some of the best movies in this franchise are just being like just... you know, they're just rehashing everything again, and it's just like
recycled over.
It's basically being told the same information, the same plot points, the same, almost the same gags to an extent on certain instances. So yes, it definitely colored my watching in reverse, colored my opinion.
Would you say probably in a more positive note? Because if we had watched them in order, you probably would have been like, oh my god.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, and I've been thinking about this, like, I think watching them in reverse actually helped, because usually when we did this, we've done this 2 years prior with the other series, that we watched the first movies and they're like, oh, this is really good, this is really great. And then by this episode, the last episode of the, you know, run, it's always like, we're just like, we're done, we're cashed out, like we have nothing, I feel nothing anymore for these movies. I don't have an opinion. So
I really think if we had watched the Paranormal Activity series in reverse, I probably would have been like, this is bearable, because I don't understand anything that's going on.
but to be
fair, I didn't understand what was going on in the proper order either, so
it's true. Yeah, that was definitely a decent first movie, and then it just falls off a cliff soon after that. And it just went on for and on and on and on.
So I have a suggestion, and I just want to see people's feedback on this. What if for our next series we pick another one and we let you know if you're able to watch any of these movies without any context or needing to see the other movies? So maybe we pick something to have six movies, jumble them up, and we have to watch them in whatever order we pull the tabs from.
Oh, okay. That would be chaotic fun. Yeah.
I could see that. Hellraiser.
Jason. That's why we were going to watch all the Jason movies.
And I hope we pick the Hellraiser movie that has Adam Scott in it first to be like, what? What is
this? Yeah. But what if we don't take that film out and then we double review it because it was in the pot? we're poorly organized. That's a fun idea. I'm going to make a note of that for next year.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Especially those Saw movies. Man. We'd be so confused. Jeez.
And there are like soon to be 11 of them?
I think 10 just came out as of this recording. I think it's 10, no? Is it 10 or 11? I don't fucking know. Nobody knows. There's no way of knowing.
no proper way of knowing. Which, somebody... okay, there's only 10 of them.
Yeah. That's not counting the Chris Rock one, right? Or wasn't that like a side?
I think it is, because it is. It became canon.
Yeah, because it's. I forget how it's loosely tied to the rest of the series, but yes, it's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That series is a funny one. I know Donnie Wahlberg was in the second one, and it took me the whole movie to realize it was him.
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I did hear this last Saw movie is actually pretty fun, and the advertising for it is fucking phenomenal. Like, having, yeah, you know, what's the name of the thing? The fucking puppet? Oh my god, I'm blanking.
Jigsaw.
Doing the Nicole Kidman AMC theater thing was really fucking funny. Hopefully you guys saw it when we shared it.
I think I rethreaded it. Yeah. Is that?
I think you regrammed it.
Too. I regrammed. Yeah. Regrammed it.
Or either that or a social media director did.
One of us did. Yeah.
President of social media director.
Senior social media director. Title is important. What did you think? What did you think of watching these in reverse? I want to get your thought.
The idea, even though watching, well, not New Nightmare, that one I enjoyed, but when we started with like Freddy's Dead, I was like, holy shit, this movie's bad.
Like, yeah,
mm-hmm. It was so awful. And for a minute there, I was like, oh, what have I done? Why did I suggest this? But then, the further along we got, the more I was like, oh my god, it's kind of relieving that we're obviously going to end this series on like a really good note. Mm-hmm. If it was the other way around, we'd be like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why people would bother listening to any of these episodes. If you just keep hating them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So we should get into our review. It's going to be a short episode. Let's get into Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, John, what are your first thoughts here?
You know, it's interesting. I've seen this movie so many fucking times, but I feel like kind of like the Evil Dead series, which is my favorite series of all time, I step away from it for like a year on purpose at this point. And when I go back, it almost feels like a fresh movie. And I'm like, oh, wow, I don't remember that. Even though I probably kind of do. I just like there's a moment where Freddy, for no reason, rips his face off. And I was like, I completely forgot about that. And that's
Yeah.
Like, this movie is like way more horror movie, and there's nothing about it's funny or fun.
Mm-mm, no.
Except for maybe the biker dude. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Which
I think that actor lied about being Italian so he could get roles like that.
Yeah.
And also at the end of the movie, not spoiling anything, but you see him again and he's not a bad guy anymore. He's not like a bad kid because he's wearing just like a print shirt. I thought that was a funny little detail.
Yeah. I want to echo the same. Yeah, of course, this is a movie I've seen a million times. But now that I'm watching it with, you know, with the critical eye, right? And I love that it's... The plausibility is pretty grounded in a factual reality despite all of the craziness. It seems very plausible, right? Like, they have simple, good answers for some of the bigger questions. This movie's kind of like a mystery movie. Another part of it is like, who's Freddy and what is his, you know, why is he, you know, terrorizing these kids and stuff. I did like that part. And there's also, and like you said, it's a more, because of Wes Craven, it's a more serious toned film. Yeah. And I also, there's some actually like really, I was really struck this time by certain imagery in this movie. Like, I really, really liked the one of the sequences when Nancy is sleeping in class and she sees the blood on the floor and she peeks her head out and she sees the body bag of her friend Tina being dragged through the school, through the hallways of the school, like an imaginary person dragging them. And I'm like, dude, this is just like, this is just Wes Craven's classic Wes Craven. Like, this is an amazing scene, you know, just beautifully shot, just absolutely great visual and stuff. So, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Beautiful. And of course,
you wanted
Amanda Weiss was like one of my crushes growing up because I was obsessed with the movie Better Off Dead. And she plays the girlfriend that John Cusack's trying to get back the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of like who you were talking about, but you're talking about Tina, right? Yeah. Dude, I totally forgot how to do the show. We didn't give you the plot in five words.
No, I know. I was like, oh,
why are we talking about this?
Yeah. I had it ready to go, and I was like, oh, okay. Got my little
notebook. Oh, man, we're doing this one loose. That's because we only have one thing to review, so we're trying to, like, really find things to talk about here.
But there's also, this is the one movie where, like, there's so many different theories as to what happened at the end, how things played out, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
no,
I
you're...
have, like, 1,000 theories about it, too.
Yeah, and spoilers, we'll hit them all. Because I was also struck by its ambiguity, you know? Like how it just shifted immediately to the ending. Almost like Black Christmas ending. Yeah, you know? Just very vague.
Also, yeah, I do have like a really... Oh, John Saxon also playing a cop trying to...
Same girls in the house, yeah.
I think I saw an interview where John Saxon basically said, yeah, I think it's the same guy, honestly.
He's a bad cop. Yeah.
Just, you know, doing my best. I don't know. But yeah, there's just like a couple of things you can take away from this movie, which in my head make plausible sense for the rest of the series, too. I don't know.
Right. You ready? Okay, let's do this proper. John, do you want to give us the plot in five words?
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For the Noe's wrap-up series, for the Skeleton Boys, coming in at number 3, for A Nightmare on Elm Street, Noe's. Nancy wears a gibara to sleep. Did you see that? I just wanted to point that out.
Mm-mm.
Guibara? Oh, I'm probably fucking mispronouncing it because I haven't had to say this word in like 10 years. Yeah, gibara, right? Guibara? Guibara.
Which is...
I think they're started in Colombia, but those shirts that everybody wore for a while that were a button-up shirt, boxy, had 4 pockets, like on the chest, one on the chest, 2 on the chest and 2 like near the belly area.
Oh, like, okay.
You've definitely seen them before. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure I have. I'm not. I just can't picture it. Yeah.
I was like, hey, at least we get some sort of, you know, person of color representation in this movie. But also on the plus side, Freddy only kills white people.
That's true.
In this movie.
In this movie, yeah.
He right becomes on. More inclusive later. He's not all that bad, you know. Coming in at number 2 for the Noe series, Kevin McAllister's mom dreams big. Did you like that? The Kevin McAllister thing at the end? She's like, I'm going to set up booby traps because she read a book about it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Kevin McAllister. Yeah.
That's a crossover right there.
That's a good
Kevin
catch,
McAllister
yeah.
Versus Freddy Krueger. And like we were talking about it previously, but
I need OG Macaulay Culkin though. I need OG Macaulay Culkin from the first movie fighting Freddy.
So, or it could be like Rory's fighting him the entire time, and he's like about to lose, and then Macaulay comes out like, "Hey, bud, why don't you just do this?" But it's actually like Freddy goes and tries to fight him, but it's a talk boy, and then Kevin McAllister is saving his brother.
And then Donald Trump comes in for a cameo.
And then quickly, swiftly gets cut out of it later.
Swiftly gets swept under the rug, yeah.
And then for my number 1 5-word review, it's actually a direct line from the movie.
Okay.
Freddy Krueger did it, Daddy.
Yeah.
When Nancy said that, I think I had looked away for a second. And then I was like, what the fuck did she just say? And I was like, oh, yeah. Of course, Freddy Krueger killed somebody. Not something sexy. This isn't Freddy's Revenge. I forgot.
No.
Not watching a sexy Freddy. Real quick, sort of Mandela effect, I think. And this probably happens every time I watch this movie. Because I probably watch, to be honest... The third one is the one I repeat the most when I watch these movies. And you don't see the house in that one, I don't think. No.
You do. Yeah. Yeah. She makes it out of popsicle sticks and stuff or something.
So the from the second movie on, the door to 1428 Elm Street is red. In this movie, it is blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read that that as well, that they that everyone imagines it to be like this bright red door, and then it continued on after, but it was always blue. It was this first movie, yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's like the homeowners were like, no, don't paint our fucking door red, and we're not swingers, because that was a thing back in the 80s.
What?
Yeah, you paint your door red, so you know it's like we're the swingers.
Oh.
It's like a secret thing. Not wow. anymore.
Nobody not anymore, John. Secret's out.
You're welcome. Cut to like you see in the background of my video, there's like just buckets of red paint. Like, don't worry about that. It's not.
There's just, I have no what if you don't have a choice in the matter? You live in apartments and the door's red. So is that
you better be into fucking, I'll tell you what. It's probably on the lease when you sign it. Like, you better be into fucking.
No.
Oh. Not again. Not again.
No.
But yeah, that's like one of the few things in this movie that I'm like, oh my god, I forgot about. Also, the stupid throw. I mean, it's not stupid. I just thought it was funny, the throwaway line where Nancy's like, oh my god, I look like I'm 20, and the joke is because they were all 20 at the time.
The yeah, that's true.
Also terrible because she's like, oh my god, I've aged 3 years. I'm like, what does that mean?
In 3 years, she's in Dream Warriors with the short perm. So, yeah. It's funny.
I was just like, people thinking that there's such a dramatic difference between the ages of like 17 to 20.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that when young people can't imagine what old is. They just, it's a concept. It's not really like a thing yet. Yeah.
Experience. Like my nephew one time, I was like, how old do you think I am? And he's like, I don't know, like 50, right? I'm like, that's right, your dad. And then he quickly says, oh, you mean your brother? I'm like, yeah, that's right, he's 90.
how old do you think my older brother is?
But then sometimes he'd be like, I don't know, aren't you like old, like 25? I'm like, yep, that's right.
Tell all your friends that. I'm 25.
And then depending on their response, either it's a good thing or just tell them I've lived a hard life. I don't know.
Yeah. Either or. Yes.
But yeah, so what it... Any of these moments in this movie that you had completely forgotten about?
Let's see. I didn't remember they were divorced. They're divorced, right? They don't outright say it.
Yeah,
but
I completely forgot about that too. I'll be honest.
They're not together at all.
Because the whole, like when John Saxon came out, I was like, why is this a reveal? Like I got so confused when he came out and I was like, why is it a reveal that he's her father?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay, they're not together. And
you know,
There is an interesting theory about the mom played by Ronnie Blakely.
Mm-hmm.
Which, oh my God, she's in something, right? That everybody's seen like a billion times.
I feel like she is.
The Love Boat. That's it. No.
Nashville? I don't think that would be my first thing. I'd be like, yeah, she's from Nashville. I think she's just iconic in this movie, dude. Be honest, dude.
Like, I swear I've seen her in something else, like a bunch, where I'm like, oh my god, it's that lady. But I don't know.
I don't think so. She did a lot of TV. This is like her biggest thing, honestly. Unless you count to Return to Salem Slot. Yeah. We both go for the same movie. Yeah.
That's the one. Or Highway to Heaven. Huh?
Yeah.
Entire good series.
Yeah. All killer, no filler.
All kill. Yeah, there you go. No, I don't know. Anyway.
No, this is the only she's known for, to be honest. She wasn't invited back either for the rest of the show.
No, because she committed suicide in the living room, according to the third movie.
Oh, yeah. But then they say she's alive, right?
No, I don't think so. I think they just say, like, randomly, before they meet Nancy, they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, they're like, that house across the street. Yeah, that lady's mom killed herself in the living room.
Yeah.
I think they said, oh, I think that lady Nancy's still alive, or whatever.
And maybe
she
went
to college.
3 years. She's
Whoa,
a doctor.
She's a woman.
Yeah.
She's too young. Bill Maher's upset by this, or whatever that actor's name is.
Woke nightmare.
What was I going to get up with her? Oh, yeah, I couldn't for the life of me also figure out, like, what does she do for a living? Like, how does she live on this in this big, beautiful house on Genesee Street? I mean, Elm Street, not the west side of Hollywood, not to be confused with West Hollywood.
They don't explicitly say anything. She seems like a...
Alcoholic?
Alcoholic, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just gonna have a little sipple before I fall asleep. She's got the fucking frozen vodka in her hand. She's like, no more. I was like, lady, you're gonna get your shit all wet when that thing thaws out.
When you shit your pants. Dude, yeah. You finish drinking her that
never,
bottle.
Never be puke all over your white sheets over here.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate this little time capsule of what, I mean, I know it's not, it's supposed to be Springwood. I don't even think they say Springwood in this, right?
They do say Springwood. Very vaguely, yes. It is mentioned.
I can't wait to rewatch this and they say, like, every 2 seconds.
Every 2 seconds, they're like, Springwood.
We're just so jaded by Springwood at this point. We're just like, yeah. We know. But I do like how this little time capsule of Los Angeles during this time where... It used to be super simple to walk to, like, I don't know, from that area, Sunset or Hollywood Boulevard, I think closer to Sunset, and just casually walk to the Venice Canals, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Easy. Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, this is, I mean, really pretty shot. Like, I mean,
sure.
Grab it if you can, but why have a fucking company move all the way to fucking Venice Beach? In one of the hardest places to do park any production, mm-hmm. do shit at the canals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the homeowners were like, get the fuck out of my backyard.
Yeah, that's true.
That's where the budget went.
That one shot. Well, the shot only lasts like a minute. So
that's all they could afford. That's what happened. They're like, we gotta get out of here. We can't be here.
I wonder if they were maybe we're doing something in a studio or something, and then they're just like, "Oh, let's go film."
Oh, maybe because definitely they recreated the interior of the house. For a lot
who
of
produced it, New Line Cinema, right? So yeah,
the house that Freddie.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like, what studios? Who would be around in 1984 at that time that they could have rented? Because they weren't a studio. They were just like an office, I imagine, somewhere. New Line Cinema.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So they didn't have their own studios, so they probably were renting nearby to do the interior shots of... Why are we overthinking this? They probably also did a lot of location shooting, I imagine. That's probably cheaper.
Tina's house was shot in Venice, so maybe that's what that
was. Oh, so they did a quick pickup. Yeah, that makes sense. And
then the high school exterior was shot actually right near me. Very close to me, actually. Weird things you learn. And they shot the boiler room scene in Lincoln Heights. Holy shit, this was all over LA.
That's near me. That's near you. Yeah. I did hear about that in a prison or something, right? I did kind of read about that.
Yeah, I mean, what's in Lincoln Heights? Just kidding. I fucking love Lincoln Heights. It's like one of my favorite places in LA.
Yeah.
Anything that doesn't look gentrified, I love. Boyle Heights, Lincoln Heights.
Two things I want to mention. Two cameos, I guess. I think you know where I'm going with this. Lynn Shea and Charles
Roseanne Flesch? Barr and Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold, they're back. Yep. We had the voice
through line of all these movies that you didn't know. They are the nightmare.
They are the living nightmare. But yeah, it's nice to see Lynn Shea. I just put it together. For one, I saw Lynn Shea and I was like, oh, I love Lynn Shea. But then I put it together that her brother is Robert Shea, who produced all these movies. I don't know why that never occurred to me. Why that? I guess there would be no reason for me to know that unless I look for it. But yeah, that's her, obviously. After hearing and seeing Robert Shea for the last month. So it's like I immediately put together that Lynn Shea is, you know, part of the Shea family there. And then the voice of Roger Rabbit, too, is the doctor. So I thought that was really cool, too.
So I didn't know about Robert Shea, or I didn't make that connection until, I think, like this week when I was looking up some stuff about the movie. Mm-hmm. Lynn Shea being in it, I did know because I'm like a huge Lynn Shea fan.
Mm-hmm.
Something I couldn't wrap my head around, and this doesn't matter, guys, non-binary pals, but she was already 30, I think, when she did this movie.
Who? Lynn Shea?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Which is like, fine. I've just been going down like a rabbit hole, like, oh, how old were people when they made their big break? I.e. wrestling, like I've been telling you, I've been watching a lot of old wrestling videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like Stone Cold Steve Austin at the time named Steve Williams as a wrestler with long blonde fucking hair and like bangs fought this guy named The Punisher, who was actually The Undertaker back in 1989 before they both changed their names. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, they were in WCW together. That was all your WCW.
It wasn't even WCW at the time. It was like some
NWA?
No, 1989. It was the wrestling company. I forgot what it was called. Like, you didn't. It was a stepping stone to making it to WCW. One of those.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, cool.
That's my little trivia of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Wrestling trivia. Yeah.
These guys are both 58.
You know who's just like fine in this movie and it's totally like not important is but yet
Nancy.
No, actually she was pretty good. I guess I say that reluctantly or whatever, but like she's actually Heather Langenkamp is actually really good in this movie, you know.
Johnny Depp
is totally forgettable in this movie. If it's not played by Johnny Depp, that part is pretty minimal. Just the boyfriend.
I was gonna say it's not even Nancy's. I mean, Heather Langenkamp's fault either. These characters are kind of bland until the end, but I will say Amanda Wise fucking killed it.
Yeah.
She grabbed you at the beginning and then.
Right. Yeah. She's more, you know, fun. It's a more fun role, I guess, for the beginning of the movie. Per se.
You remember the 80s when you were reluctantly friends with like the bully dude who would come out and then pull a knife on you and everybody's like, we're just whatever. Remember those times?
Yeah.
Pull knives on you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, there's a lot of questions that beg answers for the end of this movie, in my opinion.
Okay.
But there's also a theory I have that, or not, that I think somebody else had where I was like, fuck. As I was watching the movie, I was like, this could be true too, but the ending wouldn't make sense.
Okay. Do you want to just get into spoilers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. All these teens die, except for Nancy.
Freddy maybe dies? Question mark.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So, There was a theory that Freddy Krueger was actually innocent, and did get killed, but only as a scapegoat because Nancy's mom was actually the predator the entire time, and the only reason Nancy's mom hid the glove.
Okay, let me digest this.
how would you feel about that? Because as I was watching it, I was like, God, I mean, it could be. Like, he's just fucking angry. Like,
no, he's a child murderer. He's a child murderer, 100%.
He could be, because he's only killing 17-year-olds in this movie. So if he really wanted to kill kids,
I feel like it'd be easy. How many years does it take after the events? How many years do you know, like, when he's murdered to when they start getting haunted?
I really don't understand that one either. Like, because they were all parents. They make that pretty clear that they were parents.
Already?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, anywhere between, I don't know, 10 years, I'm assuming, maybe?
Hmm. But yet they don't know about it. Yeah, they just went along with it. But it's then, how come the kids don't even know about it? You would think, like, in a small town, you would have heard about
a murder. That's like the other interesting sort of thing about it. I think everybody, every time, like, the nightmare is over per movie, everybody just fucking forgets about these kids that died, it seems like. Kind of like what happens in the fourth one?
Dreammaster?
No, the fifth one. When they meet Roseanne and Tom, and they're just like really weird.
Oh, Freddy's dead. The sixth one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that all the teenagers were dead and whatever. Yeah.
And it seems like, yeah, just nobody talks about the stuff to hush up stuff. Like, oh, you know, the third one where they're like, yeah, that lady like killed herself in the house. So that's what bothers me too. Like, Freddy wants to get revenge by killing all these people's kids because he can't kill them. Like, the only adult I think he's killed in the series would be Nancy's mom, possibly.
We can suspect that Nancy's mom had a hard living life because of what the events of killing
when she was lying.
I mean, she's one of those characters you kind of grasp that's very flawed, right? And that she probably did wear her problems on her sleeve a lot. So she, and I can even surmise that maybe she like was affected by the murdering of Fred Krueger originally. Yeah. And then she kind of spiraled more into her vices. So,
you know what? The third one, which also breaks the rules of like how Freddy works, does kill Nancy, right? Nancy's an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And John Saxton also.
Yes.
Because Freddy's the bones.
Mm-hmm.
He's been able to do that the entire time. It's interesting.
yeah.
Yeah, just like an interesting little theory. And did you see the alternate endings to this movie?
No.
They shot three other alternate endings. One of them, it's the same exact ending, except it cuts to, you see Freddy Krueger's actually driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
There is one where it's just, that's the way it ends, but Nancy's mom has like an uneasy feeling as they drive off. The top never goes up. It's just a convertible the entire time.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I have seen these, but continue. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was one more. I can't recall what it was. I don't think it was all that important. Or maybe it was just the original ending that we saw. I'm not sure. But everybody's complaint about this is how goofy it looks when Nancy's mom gets pulled through the window. I'm like, I think it looks fine. I think it looks good. Like, it's it's in a dream state, you know?
Part of the problem is that you can kind of tell that's not real. That's not even close to the mom's going through that window. It's pretty, it's like almost like they could have shaved off a second sooner or maybe sped it up a bit. Like maybe the effect of it, I think the effect of it is not the best. So I think that kind of, as the last sort of jump scare moment, it's a little flat. That's my guess.
To be fair, like back then, there wasn't really like a jump scare moment like that ever. It was always, I think it started during that time, and then now it's become so overdone.
Not to disagree with you, but Friday the 13th.
That's what I'm saying. That era, because all those movies came out basically at the same time.
Right. Yeah, well, Friday the 13th ends with the "I'm coming out of the lake" and shit like that, right? Isn't that where?
Yeah, and then she wakes up, and it never actually happened because the cops are
in the water. Yeah, or they get pulled.
The same thing with like Evil Dead when Ash gets attacked by the thing again, which I was calling sacrilege for Nancy turning off Evil Dead during this movie. I was like, man, she deserves to die.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, something we haven't talked about yet is how close Evil Dead and Nightmare series have intertwined, right? That there's like this relationship between these movies trying to one up each other.
I think it was just appreciation. What was it, like Wes Craven and also Stephen King talked about how Evil Dead was like one of the best movies.
Mm-hmm. Which it is.
Does Johnny Depp have a poster of Evil Dead in his room? Or which movie is that?
Ooh.
I wasn't paying attention about it this time. I could be wrong, but like that, and also they watch it on the television.
And it's the scary movie they're watching. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when Evil Dead 2, when Ash is walking through the cellar, you see the glove hanging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that ending's a little, it's like, oh, we gotta do one more. Like, that became a trope, right? It's a trope now. We see it as a trope now because it was commonly used in the 80s when horror movies were like, were huge. Yeah. We need to like have this big, we need to scare the audience one more time and then, woo, you guys are out the door, right? It was less about telling a complete story, you know, but and I think that's what's kind of reflected, right? Because it's literally like she defeats Freddy and then she's like stepping out and going off with her friends, which is actually probably a dream she's having again, right? That turns into a nightmare.
Well, three different things I have about this: two theories and then a thought. One of the theories I have is, now she understands she has more control over Freddy, that this is the idea that she's just going to have to keep dealing with these nightmares until she turns 18 or whatever.
That's meets the dream warriors.
Dismiss it. Yeah.
Yeah.
that's one of my guesses, which I thought was kind of like, that sucks, because she has to deal with like this dude like trying to fucking kill her in her nightmares the entire time while dealing with the aftermath awake.
And I think it goes back to maybe Stephen King was hitting on the fact that, like, what is it? The sins of the parents fall to the child or something like that. It's kind of the idea here.
And then my second theory is, it is not Nancy's dream, but this is Nancy's mom's dream right before she dies in the movie. This is what she saw while she was passed out.
Mm-hmm.
That she thought everything was fine before she got sucked in, because Nancy leaves and then you're left with Nancy's mom, which wouldn't make any sense for it to be her dream.
Right, yeah. Interesting.
That was my guess, yeah. Because there was also this thing, like, anytime Freddy Krueger drives a vehicle in any of these nightmares, somebody dies.
Oh, I just had a thought. The vehicle they're driving is very similar to where his bones are buried. Am I crazy?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No, you're right. It is the trunk of that car, it looks like, yeah.
It looks the trunk of that car, so it's...
Which is wild, because the bones are their money, and so are the worms. They pull your hair up, but not out. Yeah. I think Tim Robinson had figured this out a long time ago.
I wonder if that's a that car they used in Dream Warrior and whatever subsequent sequels is probably a, like a fun homage to this, right? The I'm assuming the end of this.
Their 77 Oldsmobile. That's
yeah, yeah, yeah. Alrighty. I mean, what? I mean, it's, we can't add very much because me and John both really love this movie, but somehow we were able to get 40 minutes out of this. So,
I mean, I just want to add one more thing. I did like that this is very 80s synthy and a lot of the sound effects sounded like arcade noises. I really liked.
Yeah.
There's a part where literally Freddy does something and he goes, pew, 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 pew. Like,
yeah.
Fuck, yeah. But yeah. All right. We should wrap this up. Sorry.
Yeah. All righty. Cool. Any other thoughts?
No.
Cool.
Love this movie.
I'm excited. How many sexy spooky bones do you give it? John, how many sexy bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you need. Show us your sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give Nightmare on Elm Street 9.5 sexy spooky bones.
Alrighty. Yeah, I'll do the same. I mean, it's a classic. Everybody should watch it. I don't think there's anything more to say. I guess that's it, John. Nothing else.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing else left except for... I got a little bit of trivia before we end this.
Okay.
Did you know that one of the producers that was holding on to the franchise, I think for Jason also for Friday the 13th, was trying to push out a new movie after they had both done their final chapter movies? And one of them was the idea of Cheech and Chong meeting Jason.
Yeah.
But that fell through. You know why?
Why?
Because we have a surprise and we watched Freddy vs. Jason and we're only going to do the soundtrack.
So yeah, we saw Freddy vs. Jason for reasons.
I try to convince Ray here to listen to the soundtrack as extra credit, but no.
Why would you want me to listen to this soundtrack, John?
It's so good.
It's so good. So many new metal bands. So many new metal bands.
They're like, oh, you're going to look back on this and it's going to be like cringy. I'm like, no, it's not. And I'm like, oh, shit.
So for extra.
The thing I had going on was baggy jeans. That was it.
Choker chains. Yeah, so.
Ball bearing necklaces. I had one with a Deftones emblem.
Yes, feel it.
Wallet chains.
Yeah. People don't understand the 2000s were wild, man.
That hurt my feet so fucking much. And then somebody made fun of me because I hadn't like gotten to my full height yet, but my feet grew. And they said like, oh, nice clown shoes, dude. Because I was wearing Converse. So I refused to go up a size. And my feet were in pain all the time.
And we were just all day dreaming about sex. Wearing our Adidas.
Life was peachy.
As completionists that we are, we saw Freddy vs. Jason, which technically is in continuity, not really in continuity.
I mean, it kind of straight up showed you scenes from all of the movies.
Yes, but
explaining what happened.
None of it mattered for the rest of this movie, so it's kind of like, I don't know.
Because I think it's Freddy's dream.
Oh, Freddy was so worried about everybody else's dream. Yeah. He didn't know what to do without his dreams.
It's like, what would be Freddy's dream? Like, he needs to fight the exact opposite of him. Like, stoic, strong, and quiet.
So, there is... Yeah, no, there's a the Freddy versus Jason, I will say right off the bat, Kelly Rowland gets a lot of shit. I did not think she embarrassed herself, or I don't know why there's like this thing where people make fun of her. Because I mean, she's given like a, I mean, every character in this movie is garbage. Like, there's no character. There's like a loose plot about maybe the dad's killing kids or some stupid shit like that. But Kelly Rowland was horribly underwritten, bland, blank character, but she was not even the worst part about this movie.
No, in fact, I think we're going to disagree, but
I'm going to stick up for
the shit out of this movie. I was like, holy fuck. And with my plot reviews, I'll explain why. But Kelly Rowland, I mean, I thought she was fine. There was only like one pretty cringeworthy moment, but that is not, I don't think, her fault.
That's not her fault. It's just, a script. It's a poor script.
I mean, exactly, because the lines were nothing but homophobic slurs trying to make Freddy Krueger feel bad. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty. Do you want to give us, John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny. 5 words. Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Frederick versus Jason. Coming in at number 3. Story time by Freddy Krueger.
his little narration. Dream.
Coming in at number 2. Strangers make a killing together.
Yeah, that's accurate. Very nice.
And coming in at number 1 for Freddy versus Jason. Sam Raimi's Freddy versus Jason. It played like Army of Darkness so hard, and I was like, God, I think I really love this movie now.
that's a slant on Army of Darkness, though, I think.
Is it?
Is it?
I like this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, you like it. I'm giving you a hard time, but I was not a fan of this movie. But tell me why I'm wrong, John.
Yeah. I was watching interviews with the cast.
Oh my god, you went deep.
For one, I had like these vivid memories of like they were interviewing Freddy or like Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, and that other actor is Jason Voorhees.
Mm-hmm.
And they exist. They're real. I'm like, oh my god, I forgot about this. But they're interviewing the rest of the cast, and they're like, yeah, it's like wow, because like we're going back to true form. Like we're trying to make it like a horror movie where it's scary. And I'm like, oh man, I feel like they were filming a very different movie, and then they cut it. And then again, they made it very like they're inspired by Sam Raimi and just making everything kind of intentionally comical. Like you're having, they want you to have fun with this movie and not be scared.
Right.
Like everything was like a joke, like a Elvis and Costello joke where, you know, Kelly Rowland's making all these slurs against Freddy Krueger and like his dinky knives or whatever. And then basically the whole like, oh, he's right behind me, isn't he? Like, you know, it was always moments like that. I thought it was really funny. I gotta say, I do remember Jason Ritter being in this. I forgot about the whole psychiatric ward thing.
Such a nothing plot, dude. So then it went nowhere.
He adds nothing to the story.
Nothing to the story.
Trying to prove that what's her face is a virgin for whatever reason. I guess that's why Jason can't kill
her. It's important.
Question mark?
Yeah. It's important. Yeah. Come on. I totally get that. Like, people that want that go see a Freddy versus Jason movie, they just want to see Freddy versus Jason. Like, I get that part of it, right? And they tried their best to make those scenes fun, inventive, but there's everything else is second after that. The story is god awful. It's paper thin. There's no story here. They try to make you care about these people, but I mean, honestly, these kids are just interchangeable. There's really nothing to you know, you're not rooting for these individuals to live or die. And I thought, you know, I would even say like the dream killing nightmares were unmemorable. I honestly don't remember one of them. So I'll be honest. So
there's that famous one, and I remember Stars when they used to do back when he had to watch it on television, and like there wasn't like whatever the fuck you wanted. Remember those like Stars Presents, and it was always like a intercut of all these scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like what they do to, before an actual movie in the theater.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember it was Adam Sandler going "Ah-hoo!" from Billy Madison. And I think Alec Baldwin is a shadow for whatever reason, and then Freddy Krueger going "She's mine!" like after Jason stabs the girl. Also, real quick, this is a very rapey movie.
Very rapey movie. Would
been passed sexist. That guy's trying to rape her, and yeah.
Yeah, very sexist, rapist, rapey movie.
Very 2000, early 2000s.
Yeah, and like,
this is all okay.
That did you read about the director trying to get the actress from Ginger Snaps to take her shirt off, and she was like, "No, I'm not gonna do it." And she like tried to force her to do it. So did that surprise you at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
I mean, she did, or was that a body double? What happened?
No, it was a body double. Yeah, she's like, "No, I had shit in my contract. I'm not doing that. I specifically did that. It's in the contract before she came on set." But like the director was really like pushy about it, like, "No, you have to do it. You have to." Did you hate that? Like, it's such a gross thing. And I'm really happy that the, you know, she shook off for herself and she's like, "No, I'm not fucking doing that. You're a pervert." You know, so I was really happy she at least for the time stuck up for herself, you know, because I mean, you would feel as a young actress in quote unquote a big movie like this that you would get some exposure from, you know, a bigger profile from, like she wasn't pressured to do something she didn't want to do. She stuck up for herself in that sense. So I do like think that's actually pretty cool considering the times and how what this movie actually was. So
like when did Ginger Snaps come out?
Ooh, that's a great question. Like early 2000s?
Oh, so 2000. So
2000, yeah.
It already been 3 years of people already considering this like, "Oh, it's become a cult classic."
It's become a classic, yeah. It was a favorite, yeah.
So yeah, for that director, but also I think I was looking up like the other stuff this guy's done. I'm like, "Oh, okay, he's just kind of a creep."
Yeah, Ronnie Yu, yeah, he's... So he did do The Bride with the White Hair, and when I read that, I was like, yes, this is exactly what Bride with the White Hair feels like. To be perfectly honest with you, like it all just like synced up for me for this movie. It's like, this is basically it. The Bride with the White Hair, and then then Freddy vs. Jason. It's almost the same. It's like the same. You could tell it's his influence as a director is all over this movie. Like
Bride of Chucky.
Bride of Chucky, yeah.
But I will say those other ones, like I said, there was like a very, which might have not even been him. Maybe the producers kept forcing this kind of Sam Raimi thing because I think Army of Darkness was blowing up again. I remember Army of Darkness having like a pretty good box office.
But Army of Darkness?
It wasn't like compared to the other movies. And then it progressively became super famous.
Mm-hmm.
Like once it hit VHS and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they made, that was more, I found an audience through video. Because those movies were probably being checked out more through video. That was the audience for it, you know, and like, "Oh yeah, this looks great." They're just looking at the box or they knew the name and stuff like that. So I could totally see that.
Also, because they decided to call it Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Maybe to just convince people like it's a brand new horror movie. But I think by that point, if you had said this is Evil Dead 3, people would have been like, "Oh shit, okay."
Yeah.
You know, I think they fucked up doing that because Universal's going to Universal.
They got to get their hands on it. Put their fingerprints on it.
Ronnie Yu also did another movie where he had a creepy shot where it was an upskirt of Sam Jackson in Formula 51. I remember that distinctly. I'm like, this is awkward. Why even shoot this?
Yeah.
And then to top it all off, he did do one of my favorite movies when I was younger called Warriors of Virtue.
Oh yeah, I remember that movie.
About the kangaroos.
The
martial artist kangaroos.
I remember being young and thinking like, "What is this movie? This looks great." It's like, I don't know. It's like, it just looked like left turn media, right? Like in terms of like what was being given to us at that time. It's like, what the fuck is this? It's a weird looking movie.
But it was very, very on par with like Small Soldiers, like movies like that. Like,
yeah.
Really weird, like it's funky. Yeah.
Yeah. There was some, they did have an aesthetic to it that like, that we weren't seeing in like Hollywood, you know, mainstream movies. So
no, yeah,
I think he probably brought something to it. Yeah, I have actually seen the movie. It's not particularly good. Have you seen the, actually seen The Warriors of Virtue?
Not since I was like 99, when it came out, like 97-ish or whatever.
Yeah, I watched it. I never got to see it when it came out. I did eventually find it on cable and watched it. And
so I saw it as like what 97? Okay. I was like 11 or 12 or whatever. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the prime target audience for it.
Yeah.
I like Small Soldiers, which fucking holds up in my opinion.
Is Kirsten Dunst movie. In that?
Yes.
And you like a Kirsten Dunst movie? I feel like you're anti-Kirsten Dunst. Am I wrong about that?
I'm okay with her. I don't you know what? Somebody that looks very much like her, and you know what's her name? Anna Paquin. I do not care for. I've always
thought Wow. Wow. Shots fired.
One good movie. And it was She's All That. She plays the younger sister that helps Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh my God, dude. Of all the movies you could have picked, she was good at the piano. She was really good at the piano. She was, you know, it's a good performance.
And also in She's All That.
It's 4-2 She's All That. And it's crazy.
No, you know what? Interview with the Vampire. Yeah, she was. I mean, she was a child, but she did fucking great.
Wasn't that Kirsten Dunst?
Oh, that was Kirsten Dunst. Oh, you see how Anna Paquin just doesn't hold up? Because every time I think it's another Anna Paquin, nope, it's just Kirsten Dunst is just far superior.
Yeah, but you liked Anna Paquin Spider-Man.
yeah, where she played Gwen Stacy, right? right.
Yeah. So before we keep going, we should probably give our opinion about the extra credit. Like,
okay,
we did you guys a favor, and we just said we're completionist. So we heard the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack, which is populated by new metal acts like the Murder Dolls. And
Joey Jordison's other band. I don't know if you knew
El Nino.
El Nino, which I saw twice when I was a youngster.
Young metalhead. Shank.
No, I don't even have the list in front of me. I just know exactly what bands you're talking about. Because again, I think I saw them once. There's not a whole lot to do in South Texas, so I went to every fucking concert, regardless of how good or bad they were. Lamb of God is on there, right?
Lamb of God is on here, yeah.
That's a good song. Seven Dust, I saw.
Seven Dust. We get a
Chimera.
Slipknot song, which is great, by the way. Snap the demo, and then we get a Stone Sour song too, which is great. This is another side project. Yeah, we got a lot of well represented Ohio. Was it Ohio?
Their first band. It's Corey Taylor and Jim Root. Their first band.
That's their first band.
Yeah, and then they joined Slipknot. They got coached from that band Stone Sour to join that.
Did not know that.
Did you also know in my head? So you can think of the masks, right? You know, Jim Root is number 4. He's like the jester-looking guy. Not the clown guy, but the jester-looking guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Mick Thompson, who has that, like... I don't even know how to describe it. It kind of looks like the bad guy from Sinister. Whatever. Anyway, in my head, I've seen him, like, a couple of times as a young person again. And I was like, holy shit, this guitarist that has like the, I mean, at the time Sinister had to come out, but like that look, he looks like he's like 8 feet tall. That's wild. It wasn't until maybe a year ago I found out that guy's still tall. He's like 6'1", 6'2", but Jim Root is 6'6".
Like, what Jesus. The fuck? Yeah. Yeah. Got some Sepultura. Got some...
With Mike Patton, right?
With Mike Patton.
Singer of Faith No More.
In Flames.
In Flames. I got to see it once. Power Man 5000, Rob Zombie's little brother.
Killswitch. You got some Killswitch.
Which I heard that song also, and I was like, I think I was trying to listen to the soundtrack without looking at the names because I know I'd probably skip a bunch of them.
Yeah, you knew who they were.
That one popped up, and I was like, this has got to be Killswitch Engage. This song is actually pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
From Autumn to Ashes to cater to the emo kids, the screamo kids.
From what you tell me, John, since you have the ear to the what's popular, new metal is like on a resurgence. So I would say, or people are more like, you know, like they're appreciating it again.
Because it's kind of considered classic rock.
Oh God! Don't say that. Don't say any of that. I'm gonna skip right over that. I'm gonna just say that this is really is. If anybody's interested, this really is a who's who of new metal bands, to varying degrees. There's some okay stuff to mostly forgettable stuff on here. So,
which the Scream 2 soundtrack, which came out around the same time, I think. Right.
2003.
Yeah. Like 2002 ish. No,
Scream 3 came out in 2000, 2001, no?
Yeah, Scream 3? So Scream 2 came out in 1999,
1998. Yeah.
Also, another, like, who's who of new metal. Like, Wait and Bleed by Slipknot made its first huge appearance on that fucking <It's
laughs> elevated that soundtrack, just being on it. So.
And also, you're welcome for reviewing Freddy vs. Jason. I'm trying to find... This would be August 15th would have been its 20-year anniversary.
Oh, look at us. This past August was their 20th anniversary. So good on us. Look at us. okay. I don't have anything else more to say. You should wrap. Did you want to rate this? Do you have a rating for this?
I was just going to give it a 5. It's middle of the road. I can't.
Okay.
I enjoyed it a lot, but then I kept like thinking, like you said, that whole thing with like Ronnie Yu, it would pop up in my head. I'm like, I just like this guy. This whole era of directors, like, just
no. Me. Like, he's a weird choice to take over what I imagine was a very complicated idea to get to screen, right? And. Yeah. For him to be given this was a weird choice. I mean, I know it's the early 2000s, but there's so many other like competent directors comparable could add style and vision to this, but they decided to go with a very, very safe choice, I would say.
Because he's also like just via interviews, there's something a little off-putting about him. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like, shade, but like that weird guy that really wants to be everybody's friend and ends up doing really weird stuff that's not cool.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And now, like, he's trying too hard.
It's got the power to make you do stuff, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, okay.
No shade on you know, his competency as a director. I mean, the guy clearly stood out and was able to get work and make movies and get noticed and be a part of, you know, seminal projects to big projects, mid-sized projects in Hollywood. So, you know, I just think currently there's a lot more people in horror that love horror. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, that appreciate horror. So... Yeah, man.
When we get the Freddy vs. Jason remake, we'll see what
Ronnie Yu Jr. is going to take over for All righty. That's it. We have anything else?
That's it. We were dreaming. We did it. And it's over.
It's over. Yeah, we're back to reality. Dreams got to end.
Cue the outro music.
Alrighty. Out of this nightmare. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky.
One, two, Fred is coming for you. Three, four, better lock your door. Five, six, get your crucifix.